ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good evening and welcome to PM. I'm Samantha Donovan, coming to you from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation in Melbourne. Tonight, Victorians in the bushfire-hit areas survey the catastrophic damage as major blazes continue to burn. Also, Adelaide Writers' Week cancelled after a mass boycott by its guest authors, and a growing number of Australians turning to AI to plan their travels.
And now we've got this new revolution of where technology is really making travellers be able to be more informed, but also changing the way the tour operators and travel agents build their itineraries and build those insights.
First this evening, Victorians affected by the devastating bushfires of the last week are sorting through the rubble of their homes and businesses and working out what to do next. 12 major fires are still burning in the state, but no emergency warnings are in place this evening. Our reporter Kathleen O'Connor is in the central Victorian town of Harcourt, where she's been escorted through the fire zone by local authorities.
Sam, we've seen many homes destroyed. There was around 45 properties that authorities say have been destroyed in that region, including three businesses. We were escorted by a strike team, a CFA strike team in the active fire zone. It's burnt around 4,000 hectares. It was just all around me, Sam. It just showed how big and intense that fire was. And the area that was burnt, we could just see it from all around. And we were driving for around 1.5 to 2 hours. It was just devastating what we saw.
And that area, Kathleen, has long been known as a premier area for growing apples. There are a lot of farms as well, vineyards too, I think. What have people in the community been telling you about how they're coping?
Well, we spent a lot of time today at a relief centre that was in Castlemaine, not far from Harcourt, and we actually spoke to a lot of Harcourt residents who have said some had lost their properties and some had what they call lucky escapes. People had to flee there because they were in the fire zone. There was an emergency warning and they've been in these either staying with family or in evacuation zones for the last few days. Emergency services were looking at possibly allowing some of those residents back into that region so they could have a look at the damage that was done to their homes and whether or not their homes were still standing. But unfortunately, firefighters have said that's just not safe. So we had the road blocked coming in and out of that region. The trees are just blackened everywhere around us. And authorities are just worried about trees falling onto residents trying to get in and out of that area. We've also had damage to critical power infrastructure. So we actually spoke to someone from Power Corps earlier who had said that they had been working really hard to restore some of the power in that community, and also some of the fallen power lines are along those areas. We actually spoke to a Harcourt resident, Hannah Crawshaw. She described the terrifying moment the fire actually approached her family's home and they swung into action.
Everything was just a whirlwind. We were out the door in the car and we were out. We came into Castlemaine. We could see the billowing smoke coming over. Look, it was a really scary experience. I've never gone through anything like this before. Luckily for me and my family, we came out fairly unscathed, but like emotionally it's been quite a lot. I was just talking to our neighbour across the road and she said her and her husband stayed home and they actually cleared out our front yard of weeds and things that would have been flammable, and their own yard and some of the neighbours' yards. So they stayed back. I know, I got very teary. I said, thank you so much. Like, they're probably the reason why a lot of us have houses there.
That was a Harcourt resident, Hannah Crawshaw. I also spoke to people who are working here to help affected residents. Lynn Rasmussen is a camp coordinator for Blaze Aid. She is helping to set up a space in Castlemaine for those across central Victoria who have asked to stay away from their homes or their homes have been inaccessible.
Every table in that hall has a box of tissues. Those tissues are being used because the stories that you hear are horrendous. One lady sat there yesterday and she said, these are the clothes I own. And she said, I've got boots on, I'd love a pair of UGG boots or slippers. Because she had nothing else. They need their fences done. They need their fences done soon. And they need help with fencing materials. If you're not insured or your fences are not insured, that is an extremely big cost to replace all those fences.
Lynn Rasmussen is a camp coordinator for Blaze Aid. She was speaking to our reporter in Castlemaine in central Victoria. And Kathleen, the Harcourt fire is one of many that have been burning around Victoria. What's the situation across the state at the moment?
Yeah, Sam, there were multiple bushfires across the state. They are still burning, but none are now at emergency levels. They've all been downgraded to watch and act alerts. Fire crews have battled more than a dozen out-of-control fires across the state. Over the past few days, there's been fires in central Victoria, the northeast, just on the border of New South Wales, the far west, and near Victoria's south west coast in the Otways. Around the state, we've heard the latest figure from authorities that more than 500 structures, including almost 180 homes, have been lost and damaged so far. And one life has also tragically been lost, a man who died in the fire at Longwood near Seymour in central Victoria. It's still a very much active fire area around the whole of the state. And the message from authorities is to just make sure residents stay alert.
Our reporter Kathleen O'Connor speaking to me from the central Victorian town of Harcourt. In Queensland, flooding continues to affect vast areas of that state, stretching from the coastal city of Mackay, 1,000 kilometres west to Cloncurry and north to Townsville and Cairns. Central Queensland is the latest region to be affected by ex-cyclone Koji, with Clermont lashed by its highest rainfall in more than a century. In the northwest, the number of cattle killed in the floods has reached 51,000, and that number is expected to rise. Some livestock are stranded on small islands without food and threatened by crocodiles in the water. Annie Guest has more.
It's been raining again today in North Queensland. While there've been light falls at Paul Woodhouse's family property Manfred Downs, north of Julia Creek, he's worried for the community.
It's just another devastating event that's just hit North Queensland, particularly northwest in our case.
What sort of effect is it having on graziers in your region?
Desperation, I suppose you might call it. When they see their stock suffering, I mean, it's just devastating. But there's been a lot of peer support too. It's just great to see that. I mean, they're just ringing each other up. They're sharing outgas, they're sharing hay, they're sharing stories. And I think that always helps.
While the extent and effect of any further rain is yet to become clear, the number of cattle drowned or succumbing to exposure is climbing beyond 50,000, some having to be put down. Hundreds of kilometres to the north of Paul Woodhouse in the Gulf region, there are crocodiles to contend with.
You've got cattle on high pieces of ground and you've got crocodiles seeking the same high ground, I guess.
Meanwhile, the forecasts for further rain in northwest Queensland in coming days are worrying the Premier, David Crisafulli.
My grave concern is if some of those heavy rainfall fall in the wrong places, we could have a repeat event, and that means that people might go through the heartache again, which is tremendously disappointing and heartbreaking, and equally the economic impacts can be revisited as well and amplified.
The Premier has promised to follow up grazier and council complaints that rain gauges weren't working in swollen rivers during the floods. They allege the gauges weren't maintained properly, in addition to being affected by the torrent.
Communities are flying blind because there hasn't been the investment in things like rain gauges and in many places radar to warn of the impending danger. And my message to the federal government is let's prioritise the area that it needs to occur and let's begin that investment.
More than 500 kilometres southeast in Claremont in central Queensland, the rain brought by ex-tropical cyclone Koji broke a century-old record, flooding several homes, catching a few drivers unaware, and forcing the evacuation of Justin Lawrence's family by helicopter.
And then it started to get pretty real once that water rose a metre and a half within 1 hour. Yeah. And the water that had never, we've been there 10 years, has never been around that, even come close to where it had come.
Another 300 kilometres to the northeast, closer to the coast around Mackay, some roads are expected to take months to repair. And around the Whitsundays, authorities are working with owners to salvage more than 20 boats that were sunk or damaged during the cyclone.
Any guest? Well, now that Australia's ambassador to the US, Kevin Rudd, has announced he's stepping down from the post a year earlier than scheduled, speculation about his possible successor is growing. That person will need to deal with an unpredictable president, paying little heed to the global rules-based order, and press Australia's position on issues like the AUKUS alliance. Oliver Gordon takes a look at the skills the next ambassador will need to manage Australia's relationship with Donald Trump.
It's described as one of the most demanding diplomatic postings you can take, and soon former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd will step down as Australia's ambassador to the United States. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says Mr. Rudd's tenure has been a successful one.
Kevin Rudd developed relationships across the board, across Congress, across the Senate, across Democrat and Republican members.
In his time as ambassador, Kevin Rudd managed Australia's diplomatic response to the US review of the AUKUS submarine deal, multiple rounds of US tariffs, the first face-to-face meeting between Donald Trump and Anthony Albanese, and the release of Australian WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. Mr. Rudd attracted the ire of the US president last year over social media posts made before he became ambassador that called Donald Trump a man who drags America and democracy through the mud. The opposition has called on the government to, quote, ensure Australia's next ambassador is someone who can build, not complicate, that relationship. Nine Newspapers is reporting former Labor ministers Stephen Conroy and Joel Fitzgibbon as potential frontrunners. Trade Minister Don Farrell's name has also been floated, but Minister Farrell has reportedly ruled himself out. The US Study Centre's Bruce Wolpe believes appointing neutral figures would be advantageous.
I don't believe it should be a former political leader. I think the best person at this stage in the cycle, the American political cycle, and what lies ahead would be someone very distinguished from the public service. A public figure carries attributes and baggage. And Trump and his people scrutinize the politics, background, beliefs of political people that he comes into contact with.
Managing Australia's relationship with Donald Trump will be a key challenge for the next ambassador, alongside keeping AUKUS on track, with US nuclear-powered submarines expected to spend more time in Australian waters from next year. Mark Kenny is the director of the ANU's Australian Studies Institute.
The challenge is going to be finding someone who doesn't have the sort of baggage that Kevin Rudd was said to have had. The vetting of that person will need to be fairly rigorous, or else they'll find themselves back in that situation of having a lot of people going on about whether Australia is being represented by someone who has respect in Washington. I think Kevin Rudd showed that you can get a lot done, and he did have quite a high level of respect in Washington. The fact that Trump didn't even really seem to know who he was, unless that was some sort of act. I mean, Trump didn't really seem to have any great grievance with Kevin Rudd, or else he would have been pointing it out a lot more, a lot earlier.
Do you think that the next ambassador should at least not have said anything disparaging about President Trump? Or do you think that what Kevin Rudd has proven is that it doesn't really matter?
Well, I think Kevin Rudd has proven that it doesn't really matter, as has Mark Rubio and Vance, the vice president, and a number of others in the administration. I mean, Donald Trump can forgive these people. He's got so many things going on, and his style of presidency and the kind of vituperative way that he's carried on himself, getting into very personalized arguments with people, means that anyone who's been on his wrong side at some stage has got both barrels and probably given both barrels back. It is going to be hard to find people who are of significant political standing in this country and thus have been probably writing columns and appearing in interviews over a period of time, who have not said negative things about the state of the US, the style of politics that Donald Trump pursues, and what that means for Australia. But I suspect what Kevin Rudd shows is that that doesn't matter if you're prepared to go there and work hard.
Kevin Rudd will leave the post in March, but says he'll remain in the United States for his new role with the Asia Society.
Oliver Gordon reporting. This is PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. You can hear all our programs live or later on the ABC Listen app. Ahead, the pros and cons of using artificial intelligence to plan your holidays. After days of uncertainty prompted by a mass boycott of authors, next month's Adelaide Writers Week event has been cancelled by its organisers. The turmoil began last week when the festival board dropped a Palestinian-Australian author from the lineup after pressure from Jewish groups and with the support of the state's premier. Most of the other guest writers then withdrew in protest. The entire festival board resigned, and today the chair of Writers Week has also stepped down. Angus Randall reports.
In the end, it was the only option left. With authors leaving in droves and the chair stepping down while comparing South Australia to Moscow, Adelaide Writers Week has been cancelled for this year. In a statement, the Adelaide Festival Board, which manages Writers Week, apologised to Palestinian-Australian author Dr. Randa Abdel Fattah for how the decision to remove her from the lineup was, quote, represented. Journalist and author Peter Grester is one of the more than 180 writers who pulled out of the festival as part of the boycott. He's not surprised the event's now been cancelled.
The original decision to disinvite Dr. Abdel Fattah was a really lousy one. I don't agree with everything that Randa says, but that wasn't the point. This was really about opposing a decision to take someone off the program for no reason other than a kind of casual association with an event that she had no direct involvement in whatsoever.
The head of Writers Week itself, director Louise Adler, stepped down this morning, making it clear she's seething about the board's decision to axe Dr. Abdel Fattah from the lineup. In an open letter, she says the increasingly extreme and repressive efforts of pro-Israel lobbyists to stifle even the mildest criticism has had a chilling effect on free speech and democratic institutions. She writes that since Israel's assault on Gaza began, a Sydney Theatre Company performance has been cancelled after actors wore traditional keffiyeh headdresses on stage, the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra cancelled a concert by a pro-Palestine pianist, a Lebanese-Australian artist was cancelled and then reinstated as an Australian representative to the Venice Biennale, and the Bendigo Writers Festival was cancelled after ordering pro-Palestinian authors to, quote, avoid language or topics that could be considered inflammatory or divisive. Alon Casuto is the CEO of the Zionist Federation of Australia. He says community groups have a right to share their views.
Whenever there is an issue that is of fundamental importance to our community, we will make our community's voices heard.
And he insists he's not opposing free speech.
Well, I think the writers who boycotted the event are either under some false illusion that this is about freedom of speech, and they've fundamentally misunderstood some of the hateful rhetoric that Randa has been spewing over the past couple of years. And they completely misunderstand that this is actually about vilification and hate speech.
Dr. Abdel Fattah has rejected the board's apology, saying it's disingenuous and adds insult to injury. Speaking this morning, before the festival's cancellation, she says until Writers Week Chair Louise Adler stepped down, this could have been prevented.
They could have rescinded their decision. They could have, invited me back. All of this could have been avoided. But what we have now is Louise Adler, a Jewish woman, an anti-Zionist Jewish woman, who has had to resign and step down from this festival. And it really shows you, that in this moment, her identity as a Jewish woman has been erased.
As for what this complete cancellation of the festival means for its future in the years ahead, the statement from the outgoing Adelaide Festival Board says it's committed to rebuilding trust at future Writers' Week's events. Margot Lloyd is from small publisher Pink Shorts Press, which withdrew from the festival last week. She's concerned about its future.
I feel like it seems to me that Adelaide Writers Week probably can't continue with the Adelaide Festival. I'm not sure how that relationship can go on. I'm really worried about government support for Adelaide Writers Week, because at the moment, from some of the comments that are being made, it feels like that government support isn't there, which is very surprising, because this is a premier cultural event in not just South Australia, but for Australia.
There are early plans for an alternative Writers Festival in Adelaide. However, given Writers' Week was due to start at the end of February, the clock is ticking.
I think there are so many authors who were so looking forward to the event and still have that time carved out in their calendars, and there are still people who are keeping their tickets to attend as well, and so we're hopeful that we can still bring those people together.
Margot Lloyd from Pink Shorts Press, Angus Randall with that report from Adelaide. Well, if you're dreaming of a last-minute summer getaway, you may be turning to artificial intelligence for inspiration. Travellers around the world are increasingly embracing AI to plan their trips. Industry experts say it can be a helpful tool for gathering and summarising information, but they're warning it does have its limitations. Tanya Dendrinos explains.
It's the new age of travel research.
I use ChatGPT and AI to actually verify things that we've got planned to make sure that we've covered the ground that we want to cover and pick up any things that we may have missed.
Since retiring around 5 years ago, Sydney-based Brad Campbell has embarked on an overseas trip lasting up to 2 months each year, as well as additional travel around Australia. He used ChatGPT to help verify his travel plans for the first time in August.
I found that it replicated probably the bulk of the things that you would find within travel guides, but what it didn't do was it didn't tell you when you needed to pre-book things. So for major tourist destinations, particularly like Spain over summer, where things book out really, really quickly, like Sagrada Familia or the Alhambra in Seville, it didn't warn you that you needed to book some of those things up to 2 months in advance.
He says the questions inputted are critical.
I think as everyone's starting to realise, if they haven't realised it already, AI and ChatGPT is always designed to give you the answer that you want, which is sometimes not very accurate. So depending on how you frame your questions, you could end up with some information that will take you where you want to go, but it isn't necessarily going to be the experience that you want.
The Australian Travel Industry Association is the peak industry body that represents travel professionals and businesses. Its CEO is Dean Long. He's been in the travel industry for around 20 years and has seen significant technological advancement in that time.
When I started in the industry, the fax machine was still a really important part of the reservation and communication system. And now we've got this new revolution of where technology is really making travellers be able to be more informed, but also changing the way the tour operators and travel agents build their itineraries and build those insights.
A survey conducted by Australian market comparison site Compare the Market found that of around 1,000 Australians surveyed in June, almost 30% had used AI tools for travel planning. 11.5% said they'd used AI for destination recommendations, while 10% were searching for travel deals. Perhaps unsurprisingly, there was a generational divide. Compare the Market's data found older generations were more resistant to using AI, with 93% of baby boomers who responded stating they'd never used it to plan a holiday, compared to 48% in Gen Z. Dean Long says for now, AI is predominantly being used in what he calls the dreaming stage, where people conceptualise a trip, and says it's crucial to fact-check the information provided.
We do find the level of fraud and we do find the level of mistakes that occur where you're using non-trusted tools or non-trusted people or businesses such as those that are ATIA accredited. The mistake rate is significantly higher. What we will find, though, in the next 12 to 18 months is AI will start to move into that booking processes, and we actually have huge concerns over the ability of those AI algorithms to really get the information right.
He says while industry evolution is inevitable, the death of traditional travel agents who serve as a trusted single point of contact is highly unlikely.
If you're doing a Sydney-Melbourne, I think AI will really challenge the airline websites and hotel websites. Rather than going to two separate websites to do one bookings, AI will have a role in that space. But for our larger international bookings, agencies will have an incredible future purely because of the amount of money that people are spending when they're travelling.
For avid traveller Brad Campbell, nothing will replace personal experience.
the best part of travel is getting lost and discovering something that you didn't know was there in the tour guides to start with.
That's Sydney-based travel enthusiast Brad Campbell. Tanya Dendrinos with that report. Thanks for joining me for PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. The podcast of the full program is available on the ABC Listen app. And that's where you can find ABC News Daily each weekday too. PM will be back at the same time tomorrow. I hope you'll join me then. Good night.